you so much, Peter. And yes, thank you. Excited to talk about energy as the fifth Parami in the series of talks I've been giving on the Paramis. And just as kind of like the refresher, the Paramis are a list of 10 virtues that carry one towards the path of awakening. So Paramis are the Pali term, and the translation is often perfections. So the Buddha basically said, if you cultivate these virtues, you're on your way. And it's an ongoing practice with these virtues. And today in particular, we're going to be exploring the parami of energy, which in Pali is known as virya. I'm going to be using virya and energy interchangeably throughout the talk, just to kind of keep that in mind. So given that virya is the fifth parami, we did, or I did go through the first four paramis, and to give a little bit of a refresher on that as well, they were generosity, ethical conduct, renunciation, and wisdom. All of these paramis are interdependent. Not only the ones that I've just mentioned, the first four and energy, but all of them together. They all relate and support one another and facilitate the cultivation of each other. So while today's talk is going to be focusing on energy, knowing that all of the paramis are interdependent is helpful context, and I'll demonstrate in certain ways how wisdom in particular is fundamental for energy. So virya, often the idea of energy or virya that comes to mind is a sense of vitality, right? Someone says, I have so much energy, to get this done, or I'm exhausted and I have no energy. Even the other day, I woke up feeling really energized, and there are days where I wake up and I don't feel very energized. And so this is the overall conventional implication or image that might come up for one when thinking about or considering energy. But energy as a parami is not exactly the same as this image of vitality, although they do certainly correlate, but they are fundamentally distinct. Within the context of the paramis, virya or energy is understood as the quality of mind that drives effort and persistence towards renouncing unwholesome patterns and cultivating wholesome patterns. Renouncing unwholesomeness and cultivating wholesomeness, which, if you are familiar with right effort, sounds very similar or pretty much like the same thing. And they are intimately overlapped, but there is a nuanced distinction, and I think it's important to elaborate a little bit what those differences are. So, right effort is one of the elements of the Noble Eightfold Path, and it is the practice of directing effort towards the development of wholesome patterns or things that are going to be skillful. And likewise, it is the abandoning of unwholesome patterns or habits. That quality of mind within right effort that directs right effort is virya. In other words, virya is the driving force and precursor of right effort. But virya alone, as the quality of mind that drives and directs effort does not necessarily mean that it would or must lead to right effort, and that is why it's an important distinction. A helpful analogy would be to think of driving to Costco. I would need, in a very simple or in a simplistic way, I would need three things. I would need a car, I would need a working engine in the car, and the directions to get to Costco. The car has to have a working engine because without it, the car can't drive at all. And if it can't drive at all, then I can't get to Costco or anywhere else for that matter. So we need an engine. The engine of this car is Virya. The car itself is the vehicle of effort. For any form of effort to take place, it depends on the engine of Virya. So I have a car with an engine that works, but having a working car alone doesn't get me to Costco. I could, for example, get in my car and theoretically drive anywhere, whether I know where I'm going or not. So, in other words, just because I possess the ability to drive anywhere or exert effort because Virya is the engine, doesn't automatically mean it'll be right effort or that I will drive to the destination that I'm intending to get to. So it isn't enough to just have a car with a working engine to arrive at the Costco of enlightenment. Getting in the car, knowing where to go, and driving towards it is the whole arc of right effort. If I don't know how to get there, I could get in my car and drive in the opposite direction and never arrive to Costco. In this case, I'm still exerting effort because I'm driving, but it's not right effort because it's not leading me to where I want to go. I hope this analogy can maybe help to exemplify this distinction between Virya and right effort, because Virya alone is just the engine, and Virya is necessary to arrive and to practice right effort, but it alone does not mandate one to practice right effort. It's just the engine of the car, and the car can go anywhere. So, right effort requires Virya. Without it, there is no possibility of effort at all, right or wrong. And just because I possess the engine, for the engine of Virya to lead to right effort requires wisdom, which is this quality of discernment and insight necessary to guide effort into right effort. So, in this analogy, the directions to get to Costco is the wisdom. I have Virya, I have the vehicle of effort, and I have the wisdom and the map to get me there. And that as a whole is right effort. So, what's important, I think, about really highlighting this distinction is because it demonstrates how energy, as the mind's engine of effort, doesn't drive on its own towards right effort. It's a quality of mind that must be directed by one's attention towards wholesome or skillful habits, and to be able to then direct away from unwholesome or unskillful habits, which is done by being guided by wisdom. And this weaving of wisdom in the analogy showcases the interdependence of the paramis. I mentioned earlier that they all connect and depend on one another, and this is a parami that is particularly important here, that of wisdom. Wisdom is the quality of mind that discriminates and discerns. It's a huge army in terms of its ability to really, or how it really does affect and permeate the other part of me is it is the tool of the mind for developing clarity, and it is also the product of clarity itself. With regard to Virya, we saw in the analogy that wisdom is what ultimately guides energy towards wholesome or skillful habits. Without wisdom, it's probable that energy could be steered towards desires, goals, or habits that are unskillful or that ultimately lead to some form of suffering. It's probable because it's common to follow the pulls of craving and aversion. When a pang of craving comes up or you notice the contraction of aversion, it is often natural for the engine of Virya for one's energy to be directed towards fulfilling the craving or to move away from whatever one is feeling that aversion towards. Because, right, if something is going to make me feel good and I want it, then I might be or I might have the propensity to just fulfill that desire. That it's the pleasure principle. I'm sure you know Peter has mentioned it, and I think I've mentioned it in other talks before. But this point about these hindrances, in particular craving and aversion, I think is helpful in terms of illuminating how the engine can really go anywhere, and it does not mandate, right, that it's going to take one towards right effort. And because, right, I might think if I fulfill this desire and it's going to make me feel good, it's right, then one might fall into the pitfall of fulfilling the craving and finding that it's not satisfying and it only leads to more suffering. And the same can be said for aversion. If it feels right and natural to push this away because it brings discomfort, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad for me. And it may very well be the wholesome thing to do, even if it doesn't feel good. So wisdom in this context is not only understanding the mechanics of craving and aversion and knowing how they are pitfalls that this engine of the mind can lead one towards, but wisdom is also the ability to discern what is actually good from bad, to put it simply, although I don't generally like using those terms. It's very much the case that we can be drawn to things that feel good and wholesome, that are actually wholesome. If it feels good to do something that's generous for a friend from a place of authentic generosity, and I feel the pull to do that, that may very well be a wholesome thing to do. And it is one of the paramis. And so in this context, it would be a skillful thing to move towards. And it's likewise the case that we can feel aversion towards things that are genuinely unwholesome. Sometimes, you know, fear or the desire to push something away that could be threatening or harmful in some way, it's important to be mindful of that. And in this case, the aversion is appropriate. And so the point of this is to demonstrate how wisdom is key for understanding the pitfalls of craving and being able to discern if this is a pull towards something that is genuinely going to lead to something wholesome, or if this is a pull that is going to ultimately lead to dissatisfaction or suffering. So, with wisdom guiding energy, it gives us insight into these pitfalls of both craving and aversion, and it gives us insight into the types of habits that can lead to wholesome outcomes. In addition to this dharma aspect of wisdom, the quality of discerning, or rather the Quality of discerning is one piece of wisdom, but there is another piece, which is the Dharma. Because it's one thing to be able to discern, okay, this seems like craving and it's not going to lead me to where I want to go. But then it's another to know where to go. And that is the Dharma piece of wisdom, is having the conceptual wisdom of what am I supposed to move towards that is going to lead to less suffering and greater contentment or equanimity. So there are many dimensions of wisdom that, you know, we can spend so much time talking about, and I've spent some time with it because it is really fundamental for energy. And there is an implication as well when it comes to intentions. We all carry intentions, big or small, conscious or unconscious, and we generally use the fuel of virya to carry out those intentions. If, let's say, a person has the intention to start a business, then typically that person would invest their energy towards achieving that. But if the intention to start a business is rooted in some unwholesome qualities, like they're fantasizing about becoming super rich from starting this business, or imagining how they might become powerful and famous, then it would lead to suffering in some shape or form. Ajahn Suchito said in one of his books on the Paramis, he said, "We can never arrive at the imagined perception, but we always experience the results of our intentions." That's a really important quote, and I'll reference it later in the talk as well. But essentially, discerning what one's intentions are, is helpful for clarifying if our energy is going to be invested in pursuing the craving of an imagined perception that could never be reached, which can then sincerely protect one from future disappointment. In other words, if this person, not knowing that their intention is really rooted in some form of greed, of either becoming really rich or the greed of having a particular image of themselves as being super rich and powerful, they may spend a lot of time and invest a lot of their intention and virya and energy towards this thing, and ultimately find that it's very unsatisfying and disappointing, and it wasn't what they imagined. But it was because the intention was rooted in some of these unwholesome roots, often greed, craving, or was it delusion, ignorance, aversion, and craving. I would think those are the ones. So that's why it's important, because we all have intentions, and to invest the mind's energy, the engine of virya, to take the car towards those things, it should be important to know where the car is going and if it truly is going to lead to what one ultimately wants. And Ajahn Suchito did share a really perfect example to illustrate this. And so I'm going to read this little snippet. He said, "When I became a monk, it was along with two others, a man who wanted to live a wandering life free from obligation and tedium, and a man who wanted to live where he could, a place where he could live in harmony with others and be shown proper respect. They had their good reasons. For my part, I wasn't that convinced by monastic life, but felt it could offer me the resources to inquire into my mind. I'm still a monk after 35 years, the other two disrobed within a year." And this is a really striking example that personally I think really moved me, and that's why I wanted to share it, because it showcases how intentions that are guided by wisdom, that are guided by a clarity of what these intentions really are, not only lead to more wholesome outcomes, but it also demonstrates the integrity and the sustainability that these intentions offer when one commits their energy to them. So energy and wisdom go hand in hand in order to practice right effort. And another really important piece here is that of mindfulness, which in this context is the directing and redirecting of energy or attention. The core thesis regarding Virya is that wherever attention goes, energy flows. If Virya is the engine of the car, and the car itself represents effort, and wisdom is the knowledge of where to go, then attention is the driver of the car. Wherever the driver drives the car is where Virya is going to go, whether it's to Costco, the Costco of enlightenment, or anywhere else. And this is where I think the quote by Ajahn Suchitto really bears repeating, because it exemplifies the crucial role that attention plays. We can never arrive at the imagined perception, but we always experience the results of our intentions. In other words, whenever we are awake and conscious and attention is on, then Virya is also on, because attention is what carries and directs Virya. So throughout the day, wherever attention is getting placed, regardless of whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, skillful or unskillful, Virya is going to naturally invest its energy towards it, and whatever gets invested energy ultimately produces outcome. By practicing mindfulness, being aware of where your attention is, noticing without judgment whether it's being placed on habits that are skillful or unskillful, is key. If it's an unwholesome habit, then naturally the task of mindfulness is simply to redirect attention to a skillful habit. There's no judgment, no self-criticism, because that in and of itself is then where your attention gets placed. This happens to me all the time, and maybe a lot of you can relate. You maybe notice that you got caught up in doing something, and it maybe was difficult or ultimately unsatisfying, and there's a sense of self-criticism that comes up. You know, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. I should have, you know, been doing this other thing that would have been more productive. But even that self-criticism that is coming up in response to whatever unskillful thing I might have been doing is then where my attention is getting placed, and where energy is then investing its energy into. So I'm ultimately then fueling judgment in that moment. So I think it is relevant in some way to even note how Birya is not really biased. There's no intrinsic bias to it because it's just the engine. And certainly, I mean, there are no biases in any of these components, but including attention. It is simply a matter of where that attention is placed. It's where Virya will fuel and invest its energy into. When it comes to applying this to daily life, at the core, it boils down to the interdependent practice of wisdom and mindfulness. In terms of wisdom, it entails an ongoing curiosity and discernment towards one's intentions, no matter how big or how small. Why did I, for example, you know, bake these cookies for my friend? Is it because I wanted to be seen as a good person? Or if someone, let's say, during the day said something that kind of it hit a nerve, and I noticed in that interaction that there was some defensiveness that came up. In the aftermath, being curious and asking, why did that trigger defensiveness? Or why was I passive aggressive in this moment? What was I avoiding, or what was the underlying aversion in those moments? So this practice of being curious and inquiring in order to discern what was going on that motivated this behavior, especially if it was a behavior that did lead to an unsatisfying outcome, is the core of the discerning aspect of wisdom. And I mentioned briefly earlier as well that wisdom is not only the discerning element of the mind, but it also entails conceptual wisdom, which is knowing what is skillful versus unskillful. It's one thing to use the wisdom function to inquire and investigate what were my intentions, what are my intentions, and it's another to then know what to do with that information. What are skillful or wholesome habits, and what are unwholesome habits? These are things that we learn from the Dharma, and these things serve as conceptual wisdom. So practices like generosity or loving kindness, and especially mindfulness, are all examples of skillful and wholesome habits to redirect energy and attention towards when one notices that one's intentions maybe were misplaced or misguided, and that's normal. With regard to unwholesome habits and in the conceptual wisdom regarding that, these tend to be fueled by ignorance, craving, and aversion. And so, having that conceptual wisdom, when one investigates and inquires, why did I do this? What's going on here? If I'm noticing that there is a seed of ignorance, craving, or aversion, I now know that these seeds are present, that they need to be perhaps modified or abandoned, I think more than anything, towards seeds of wholesome or skillful qualities, such as mentioned, generosity, forgiveness, loving kindness, and mindfulness. If more than anything, one just redirects their attention to their breath or to the present, often that's all that is needed in order to redirect from something that has been maybe investing, or when one has been investing energy towards something that has been unsatisfying. Just returning to the breath is enough and a simple but powerful expression of wisdom. But the key here with mindfulness and this accompanying fuel of virya is that it's not about getting rid of unwholesome habits. It's a practice of just withdrawing attention from unwholesome habits and redirecting. Because once attention is withdrawn, so is the energy. And when energy is withdrawn, those unwholesome habits won't have the nourishment to blossom into outcomes of suffering later on. Sometimes it might be skillful to maybe inquire or process, say, wounds when one is discerning or trying to understand what is going on with a particular intention. And in that sense, it may very well be skillful to place one's attention and really look more deeply into an intention or a pattern that has been producing a lot of suffering. But often it is enough to just withdraw one's attention. So, energy and mindfulness fuel this wise discernment, because once one's energy and one's attention redirects from the object that one was investigating, whatever is being done, why did I do this or why didn't I do this, to the curiosity of the underlying intention, then you not only gain deeper insight of, oh, this is what was driving me, this is why I did this, but with that clarity, you can then more intentionally direct your attention and virya towards wholesome habits. So the point here is that there's this self-reinforcing wisdom that comes from practicing discernment, which is wisdom in and of itself, that once I gain this deeper insight, that becomes wisdom, and then that wisdom is what guides me towards these habits that are going to be more fruitful for equanimity and contentment and peace of mind. If there's anything that can be taken away from this talk and from the essence of how this applies to daily life, it's to recall this thesis of virya. Wherever attention goes, energy flows. As you navigate your day, whether you're conscious of it or not, your attention is going to be placed somewhere. And if it can be understood, that attention and virya fuels whatever it touches, whatever it's placed on, and whatever it then fuels leads to outcomes, then it would be important and valuable to be mindful of being mindful throughout the day, being mindful of where your attention is in service of redirecting the attention and the underlying fuel of energy that is virya towards areas and habits that are ultimately going to blossom into outcomes that are more aligned with one's well-being and peace. Because ultimately, that's, I think, what everyone wants is just to be happy, be free from suffering. And sometimes, as mentioned, the mind does have these pulls towards craving and aversion, and we all experience it to some degree or another. And so, to be aware and curious and clear about one's intentions that often do carry this misguided notion that this is going to lead me to be happy if I become a successful and famous, business owner and I make lots of money and I'm well known and respected. Naturally, it causes one to really believe that this is what is going to lead to joy or peace or equanimity. And you can take that example and extrapolate it to anything. If I bake my friend's cookies, I'm going to feel like a good person. If I, don't respond to this text message, even though I know it's an important conversation, it's probably good, right? The essence of craving and aversion. If we understand that what we ultimately want at the core is just to be happy, then to be curious about these intentions and to be able to notice and be clear if these intentions are really rooted in something that's going to get me there or something that's going to take me away. Because virya as the engine will take you wherever your attention goes. And that is something that we can redirect with intention and ongoing practice throughout our day. And one final note is an element of faith, which the Pali term for is sada. Because there is a self-reinforcing nature to these practices, and in particular, energy, where by practicing this redirection of energy and attention, one then notices the outcomes. They feel more content when they don't doom scroll or they do practice authentic generosity. Or they are just focusing on the simplicity of the breath. One notices the outcome and feels energized by that and ends up creating this momentum and a strength to continue that practice. And that is its own form of wisdom. And the The piece about sada, that's faith, is also something that can support virya or energy, because sometimes it can be hard to maybe fully believe or trust that if I do this, it's going to get me there, because the pull to become a successful business owner seems really convincing, and I think I should go this way. But what I think is a really unique and admirable quality in Buddhism is this notion of just try it out. Don't take my word for it. If you have this element of faith that these things can work, then that can help motivate and drive one to try. And by just experimenting and trying it for yourself, you may notice that the effect is often one that does lead to greater peace of mind or joy. So that concludes the talk for today. And I thank you all for your presence and attention and virya. And for the remainder of our time, I welcome any questions. I'd be super interested to hear reactions or if anything stood out to anybody.
Actually, I have a question.
Yes, Doran?
Yes.
Speak loud, please.
There was a
Report.
specific word that you mentioned that was something like equanimity. Can you spell that, please?
Equanimity.
Yes.
Yes, it is. I have to look spell it for to be able to read it. EQ U A N I EQUANIMITY.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Oh, Steve?
Hey, Ali, thanks for the talk. I'm hopeful that Virya can somehow lead to cookies. So I'm fascinated with what we consider Virya to be in and of itself. When you were saying the engine or the energy, and it seems like it's the engine, as you say, and that there's maybe no inherent intent because it isn't biased. You mentioned it's not biased. Does it presume anything at all? Does it presume a clarity or a diligence or willingness, even if that diligence or willingness is towards something that's unconstructive or pursuit of novelty, dopamine, or I suppose it does not presuppose any context that's meaningful necessarily.
So your question, if I understand it right, is if there is maybe some quality of diligence that is intrinsic to energy?
Yeah, is it? Yeah, yes.
That's a great question. And my instinct is to say that there isn't necessarily a quality of diligence that is intertwined with energy, but it is what fuels diligence.
Okay. So
If that makes
if
sense.
it's just like a one-to-one relation with what we consider in English to be energy, then that's it. Is it that simple?
I would say that it is different from just the normal idea or image of energy. It does very much overlap, right? Because if I'm attending to or directing my attention towards things that are, say, mindfulness or compassion or loving kindness, it does energize one. One finds that they maybe have a greater sense of spaciousness, their mind is more clear and less crowded. And often when one is feeling those effects is when one says, oh, I'm feeling really energized today. So the element of virya in the mind is, right, the engine that fuels energy, and it is what often does lead to outcomes where one does feel energized in that conventional sense. And then likewise, when one is feeling not energized, when someone's like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted and burnt out, one might see and notice that it is because their attention and the underlying engine of virya was being directed towards things that might have been rooted in craving or aversion or delusion. Does that make sense?
It does, and it was useful for you to remind that where you don't set attention, you know, things sort of fall off or they get near. So attention sets the target for virya, in a sense, is what I kind of gathered from you. And where there's no energy, then you're not empowering something. Yeah, where there's no attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Great point.
Thank you. Side note, Peter, I bought I'll bring a USB microphone next time I come, which will probably be next week.
Thank you. Thank you. Satish has something.
I'm just wondering, does desire have anything to do with virya, energy?
Yes, if desire has anything to do with it?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, it is actually an important thing to be mindful of, craving, aversion, I mean, any of the hindrances, but certainly maybe on average, we may lean towards craving or aversion. And so being aware of when energy, or I'm sorry, when craving comes up, or being mindful and noticing when aversion comes up, and then redirecting one's attention and effort to something else. And that's the wisdom piece. So it's not so much that maybe there's a direct link between virya and craving, but to apply mindfulness and to become aware of when craving is showing up or when it is embedded in intention is how then we can direct our attention and therefore virya and energy towards something else that's going to be more skillful.
You didn't mention desire in that explanation.
Yes.
That's what craving is desire.
Sure. Is that right? Desire could be for, you know, good things and bad things.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yes.
What you have it is.
Oh, did someone say something?
I said it's what your habit is. It's what you invest your mind into, and it's constantly on the go, and you have to be aware of carrying that balance in a nonverbal way. I do. That's what I use the breath for, so that I can keep myself balanced. That's a good word.
Balance is
Steve
certainly
Perlman.
Peter, did you?
Steve,
you called on
Steve Perlman. You had your hand up.
Hey, Allie, thanks for
Hi,
the
Steve.
Talk today. Virya, that's a thought based energy. Because in order to determine what's wholesome and not, and to place your efforts, you would have to be thinking, right, in order to do that. But what I find curious is if I'm driving somewhere, I can be completely checked out of that awareness of what I'm doing and where I am, and yet somehow I still get there. How is that possible?
It's a really great example that I think many of us can probably relate to. And I've also experienced the thing where, you know, you're driving unconsciously, you know, and you miss the exit, right? Because you were just so like not paying attention. And then sometimes, Steve, like you said, you kind of end up there.
Yep, been there.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, I think, Allie, what you were commenting before is that wisdom is so important.
Right.
And when wisdom is, in a sense, a form of energy. But that form of energy interacts with the form of energy that has to do with paying attention. while you're driving, or the ability to make better choices. You know, skillful means, you used the term, skillful ways of doing things. So wisdom is the guiding principle. I'm glad you really emphasized that, that the energy is there. It's either going to be wholesome or unwholesome. It really depends on whether there's sufficient attention and wisdom brought to bear.
Yeah.
There's clearly energy, even if it's unconsciously being played, right? I mean, something, whether I'm checked out or not into, thoughts about some story, my body is still executing something habitual, I guess its own wisdom, to be able to see the road and adjust what you're doing without actually being all that aware of it. Anyway, I find it just interesting to think through that. I have no clue.
I don't know if you can, if there's time. Sharon and Allie, thank you for your talk. What I found interesting is that the mind, when it becomes engaged in thought, for me, sometimes it seems to get stuck in thoughts. When I say stuck, I mean, I'm kind of ruminating over something again and again and again, and it wears me out. And so it's really a tangible example of my expending energy in not a productive way. So you certainly brought that my attention to that in your talk. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Sharon. And I think that's really a perfect example, and also one that I think many of us can also relate to. How, when noticing, being stuck in rumination or maybe engaging in some habit autonomously, that it does wear one out. Even though there's this compelling, say, drive to do it, or it's autonomous, similar to what Steve was saying, sometimes these samskaras or sankaras can be really powerful and drive one towards certain mental habits or behavioral habits. And that does sometimes require more, say, more of a concerted effort to inquire the underlying, say, roots or intentions of that behavior. And it may require a little bit more practice and time and then energy to redirect from those patterns, mental or otherwise. But it is certainly possible, even if sometimes certain patterns can be hard.
Yeah, in my experience, when I have a decision to make, I can actually expend a lot of energy debating both sides or all sides of considering what to do, or how to view things wholesomely. So that's exhausting, and that's where I can sometimes get stuck. So this is really a very enlightening point or parami, as you point out.
What you just described, Sharon, is the energy of skeptical doubt.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite hindrances.
And Sharon, I think it bears mentioning that even you sharing this right now, I think, is an example of wisdom. Noticing maybe from this talk how it does show up in some of these patterns is, in and of itself, I think, the essence of what we're talking about, and how now that knowledge or that wisdom is insight that can be helpful towards then guiding you towards or guiding attention away from ruminating or skeptical doubt. So I think this is great. I'm so glad you shared this.
Well, I just have to recognize when it's happening, and that's the key. The key is to become aware before a great deal of time and energy has been spent.
Yeah, we're running over on time and energy. So, Florence has a question.
I do have one last question. I'm curious to know, does overthinking also use up what we consider to be virya? And at what point do we know that we are thinking versus overthinking? In relation to virya, if there is a relation.
Oh, there is.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think that's an insightful question, and it really comes down back to wisdom, but wisdom in terms of the quality of discernment, because generally, conventionally speaking, when we think of overthinking, it does tend to be rumination that doesn't really lead much, you know, to say contentment, but sometimes, you know, it can be skillful to be very intentional and to think through something that might be coming up. And so to be able to distinguish, is this a skillful form of intentional processing, or am I ruminating and overthinking and spiraling into narratives and stories that reinforce a sense of self that isn't really there, or that is rooted in anger or aversion or craving, then with that insight, one then redirects from that form of overthinking to the breath or something that is going to be more grounded in the body or in joy or equanimity. But the key, I think, to answering your question is really just discernment. There isn't, I think, often a right cookie cutter answer for any of this. It does require curiosity and intentionally becoming aware of what one's underlying intentions are.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Very interesting presentation, Allie. Thank you. And a good conversation afterwards. It's our custom at the end of these gatherings to sit together in silence briefly. So let's do that. Thank you for your practice. Wish you well. Just a little headliner. Next week, it'll be open Dharma questions. I'll be available to answer any questions you may have about concepts of Buddhism or your practice. Well, hope that we're all reasonably safe and happy till the next time we have a chance to chat.